received us with all possible kindness. Before dinner, we went into the church, famous for its painted windows, but we had not time to survey a tenth part of them. We could only observe, in general, that the colors were exceedingly lively and the figures exactly proportioned. In the evening, we reached once more the hospitable house of Mr. Loyal at Rotterdam. Tuesday, July 1st, I called on as many as I could of my friends, and we parted with much affection. We then hired a yacht, which brought us to Hilvoetsluis about 11 the next day. At 2 we went on board, but the wind turning against us, we did not reach Harwich till about 9 on Friday morning. After a little rest, we procured a carriage and reached London about 11 at night. 2 hours with Dr. Johnson. I can by no means regret either the trouble or expense which attended this little journey. It opened me a way into, as it were, a new world where the land, the buildings, the people, the customs were all such as I had never seen before. But as those with whom I conversed were of the same spirit as my friends in England, I was as much at home in Utrecht and Amsterdam as in Bristol and London. Sunday the 6th, we rejoiced to meet once more with our English friends in the new chapel, who were refreshed with the account of the gracious work which God is working in Holland also. Thursday, December 18th, I spent 2 hours with that great man, Dr. Johnson, who was sinking into the grave by a gentle decay. 1784, Monday, April 5th. I was surprised when I came to Chester to find that there also morning preaching was quite left off, for this worthy reason, because the people will not come, or at least not in the winter. If so, the Methodists are a fallen people. Here is proof. They have lost their first love, and they never will or can never recover it till they do the first works. Wesleyan early rising. As soon as I set foot in Georgia, I began preaching at 5 in the morning, and every communicant, that is, every serious person in the town, constantly attended throughout the year. I mean every morning, winter and summer, unless in the case of sickness. They did so till I left the province. In the year 1738, when God began his great work in England, I began preaching at the same hour, winter and summer, and never wanted a congregation. If they will not attend now, they have lost their zeal, and then, it cannot be denied, they are a fallen people. And in the meantime, we are laboring to secure the preaching houses to the next generation. In the name of God, let us, if possible, secure the present generation from drawing back to perdition. Let all the preachers that are still alive to God join together as one man, fast and pray, lift up their voice as a trumpet, be instant, in season, out of season, to convince them that are fallen and exhort them instantly to repent and do the first works, this in particular, rising in the morning, without which neither their souls nor bodies can long remain in health. Monday the 19th, I went on to Ambleside, where, as I was sitting down to supper, I was informed that notice had been given of my preaching and that the congregation was waiting. I would not disappoint them, but preached immediately on salvation by faith. Among them were a gentleman and his wife who gave me a remarkable account. Remarkable escape from prison. She said she had often heard her mother relate what an intimate acquaintance had told her, that her husband was concerned in the rebellion of 1745. He was tried at Carlisle and found guilty. The evening before he was to die, sitting and musing in her chair, she fell fast asleep. She dreamed that one came to her and said, "Go to such a part of the wall, and among the loose stones you will find a key, which you must carry to your husband." She waked, but thinking it a common dream, paid no attention to it. Presently she fell asleep again and dreamed the very same dream. She started up, put on her cloak and hat, and went to that part of the wall, and among the loose stones found a key. Having with some difficulty procured admission into the jail, she gave this to her husband. It opened the door of his cell as well as the lock of the prison door, so at midnight he escaped for his life. The Banks of the Spee. Saturday, May 8th, we reached the banks of the Spee. I suppose there are few such rivers in Europe. The rapidity of it exceeds even that of the Rhine, and it was now much swelled with melting snow. However, we made shift to get over before 10, and about 12 reached Elgin. Here I was received by a daughter of good Dr. Plenderleith, late of Edinburgh, with whom, having spent an agreeable hour, I hastened toward Forres. But we were soon at full stop again. The river Findhorn also was so swollen that we were afraid the ford was not passable. However, having a good guide, we passed it without much difficulty. I found Sir Lodowick Grant almost worn out. Never was a visit more seasonable. By free and friendly conversation, his spirits were so raised that I am in hopes it will lengthen his life. Sunday the 9th, I preached to a small company at noon on His Commandments Are Not Grievous. As I was concluding, Colonel Grant and his lady came in. For their sake, I began again and lectured, as they call it, on the former part of the 15th chapter of St. Luke. We had a larger company in the afternoon to whom I preached on Judgment to Come, and this subject seemed to affect them most. 12.5 miles in heavy rain. Monday the 10th, I set out for Inverness. I had sent Mr. McCollum before on George Whitfield's horse to give notice of my coming. Hereby I was obliged to take both George and Mrs. McCollum with me in my chaise. To ease the horses, we walked forward from Nairn, ordering Richard to follow us. As soon as they were fed, he did so, but there were two roads. So as we took one and he the other, we walked about 12.5 miles of the way through heavy rain. We then found Richard waiting for us at a little alehouse and drove on to Inverness. But blessed be God, I was no more tired than when I set out from Nairn. I preached at 7 to a far larger congregation than I had seen here since I preached in the Kirk. And surely the labor was not in vain, for God sent a message to many hearts. Tuesday the 11th, notwithstanding the long discontinuance of morning preaching, we had a large congregation at 5. I breakfasted at the first house I was invited to at Inverness, where good Mr. Mackenzie then lived. His three daughters live in it now, one of whom inherits all the spirit of her father. In the afternoon, we took a walk over the bridge into one of the pleasantest countries I have seen. It runs along by the tide of the Clear River and is well cultivated and well wooded. And here first we heard abundance of birds welcoming the return of spring. The congregation was larger this evening than the last, and a great part of them attended in the morning. We had then a solemn parting, as we could hardly expect to meet again in the present world. Incidents in Scotland. Tuesday the 18th, I preached at Dundee. Wednesday the 19th, I crossed over the pleasant and fertile county of Fife to Melville House, the grand and beautiful seat of Lord Leven. He was not at home, being gone to Edinburgh as the king's commissioner, but the countess was with two of her daughters and both of her sons-in-law. At their desire, I preached in the evening on It is appointed unto man once to die, Hebrews 9:27, and I believe God made the application. Thursday the 20th, it blew a storm. Nevertheless, with some difficulty, we crossed the Queen's Ferry. Saturday the 22nd, Edinburgh. A famous actress just come down from London, which, for the honor of Scotland, is just during the sitting of the Assembly, stole away a great part of our congregation tonight. How much wiser are these Scots than their forefathers. Sunday the 23rd. I went in the morning to the Toll Booth Kirk, in the afternoon to the old Episcopal Chapel. But they have lost their glorying. They talked, the moment the service was done, as if they had been in London. In the evening the octagon was well filled, and I applied with all possible plainness, God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. John 4:24. Wesley at 81. Monday, June 28th, Epworth. Today I enter on my 82nd year and found myself just as strong to labor and as fit for any exercise of body or mind as I was 40 years ago. I do not impute this to second causes, but to the sovereign Lord of all. It is he who bids the Son of Life stand still, so long as it pleaseth him. I am as strong at 81 as I was at 21, but abundantly more healthy, being a stranger to the headache, toothache, and other bodily disorders which attended me in my youth. We can only say, the Lord reigneth. While we live, let us live in him. In the afternoon, I went to Gainsborough and willingly accepted the offer of Mr. Dean's chapel. The audience was large and seemed much affected. Possibly some good may be done even at Gainsborough. Tuesday the 29th, I preached in the street at Scotter to a large and deeply attentive congregation. It was a solemn and comfortable season. In the evening, I read prayers and preached in Ostone Church, and again in the morning. Wednesday the 30th in the evening, I preached at Epworth. In the residue of the week, I preached morning and evening in several of the neighboring towns. Wednesday, August 18th, I went to Admiral Vaughan's at Dracoon, one of the pleasantest seats in Great Britain. The house is embossed in lofty woods and does not appear till you drop down upon it. The Admiral governs his family as he did in his ship with the utmost punctuality. The bell rings and all attend without delay, whether at meals or at morning and evening prayer. I preached at 7 on Philippians 3:8 and spent the evening in serious conversation. Tuesday the 31st, Dr. Cope, Dr. Whatcoat, and Dr. Vassy came down from London in order to embark for America. Wednesday, September 1st, being now clear in my own mind, I took a step which I had long weighed in my mind and appointed Mr. Whatcoat and Mr. Vassy to go and serve the desolate sheep in America. Thursday the 2nd, I added to them 3 more, which I verily believe will be much to the glory of God. Sunday the 12th, Dr. Cope read prayers and I preached in the new room. Afterward, I hastened to Kingswood and preached under the shade of that double row of trees which I planted about 40 years ago. How little did anyone then think that they would answer such an intention. The sun shone as hot as it used to do even in Georgia, but his rays could not pierce our canopy. Our Lord, meantime, shone upon many souls and refreshed them that were weary. Burglary at Wesley's house. Saturday, November 21st, London. At 3 in the morning, 2 or 3 men broke into our house through the kitchen window. Thence they came up into the parlor and broke open Mr. Moore's bureau, where they found 2 or 3 pounds. The night before, I had prevented his leaving there 70 pounds, which he had just received. They next broke open the cupboard and took away some silver spoons. Just at this time, the alarm, which Mr. Moore by mistake had set for 3:30 instead of 4, went off, as it usually did, with a thundering noise. At this the thieves ran away with all speed, though their work was not half done. The whole damage which we sustained scarcely amounted to 6 pounds. Sunday, December 26th. I preached the condemned criminal's sermon in Newgate. 47 were under sentence of death. While they were coming in, there was something very awful in the clink of their chains. But no sound was heard either from them or the crowded audience after the text was named, "There is joy in heaven over one sinner that repenteth, more than over 99 just persons that need not repentance." See Luke 15:7. The power of the Lord was eminently present, and most of the prisoners were in tears. A few days after, 20 of them died at once, 5 of whom died in peace. I could not but greatly approve of the spirit and behavior of Mr. Villette, the ordinary, and I rejoiced to hear that it was the same on all similar occasions. Friday the 31st, we had a solemn watch night and ushered in the new year with a voice of praise and thanksgiving. Chapter 20. Wesley collects money for the poor, visits the House of Lords, his reasons for his long life, how is the tide turned, last entries. 1785, January 1st. Whether this be the last or no, may it be the best year of my life. Sunday the 2nd. A larger number of people were present this evening at that renewal of our covenant with God than was ever seen before on the occasion. Wesley at 81 begs 200 pounds. Tuesday the 4th. At this season we usually distribute coals and bread among the poor of this society, but I now considered they wanted clothes as well as food. So on this and the 4 following days I walked through the town and begged 200 pounds in order to clothe them that needed it most. But it was hard work as most of the streets were filled with melting snow, which often lay ankle deep, so that my feet were steeped in snow water nearly from morning till evening. I held it out pretty well till Saturday evening, but I was laid up with a violent flu, which increased every hour, till at 6 in the morning Dr. Whitehead called upon me. His first draught made me quite easy, and 3 or 4 more perfected the cure. If he lives some years, I expect he will be one of the most eminent physicians in Europe. I supposed my journeys this winter had been over, but I could not decline one more. Monday the 17th, I set out for poor Colchester to encourage the little flock. They had exceedingly little of this world's good, but most of them had a better portion. Tuesday the 18th, I went on to Misleythorne, a village near Manningtree. Sometime since, one of the shipwrights of Deptford Yard, being sent hither to superintend the building of some men of war, began to read sermons on a Sunday evening in his own house. Afterward, he exhorted them a little and then formed a little society. Sometime after, he begged one of our preachers to come over and help them. I now found a lively society and one of the most elegant congregations I had seen for many years, yet they seemed as willing to be instructed as if they had lived in Kingswood. Wednesday the 19th, I returned to Colchester, and on Thursday the 20th, preached to a lovely congregation at Purfleet, and the next morning returned to London. Sunday the 23rd, I preached morning and afternoon at West Street and in the evening in the chapel at Knightsbridge. I think it will be the last time, for I know not that I have ever seen a worse behaved congregation. Tuesday the 25th, I spent 2 or 3 hours in the House of Lords. I had frequently heard that this was the most venerable assembly in England, but how was I disappointed? What is a lord but a sinner born to die? 50 years growth of Methodism. Thursday, March 24th, Worcester. I was now considering how strangely the grain of mustard seed, planted about 50 years ago, has grown up. It has spread through all Great Britain and Ireland, the Isle of Wight, the Isle of Man, then to America from the Leeward Islands through the whole continent into Canada and Newfoundland. And the societies in all these parts walk by one rule, knowing religion is holy tempers, striving to worship God, not in form only, but likewise in spirit and in truth. Tuesday, June 28th. By the good providence of God, I finished the 82nd year of my age. Is anything too hard for God? It is now 11 years since I have felt any such thing as weariness. Many times I speak till my voice fails and I can speak no longer. Frequently I walk till my strength fails and I can walk no farther. Yet even then I feel no sensation of weariness, but am perfectly easy from head to foot. I dare not impute this to natural causes. It is the will of God. Tuesday, August the 9th, I crossed over to the Isle of Wight. Here also the work of God prospers. We had a comfortable time at Newport, where there is a very teachable, though uncommonly elegant, congregation. Wednesday the 10th, we took a walk to the poor remains of Carisbrook Castle. It seems to have been once exceedingly strong, standing on a steep ascent, but even what little of it is left is now swiftly running to ruin. The window, indeed, through which King Charles attempted to make his escape, is still in being. It brought to my mind that whole train of occurrences wherein the hand of God was so eminently seen. Thursday the 25th, about 9 I preached at Mousehole, where there is now one of the liveliest societies in Cornwall. Hence we went to the Land's End, in order to which we clambered down the rocks to the very edge of the water, and I cannot think but the sea has gained some 100 yards since I was here 40 years ago. Wesley visits the House of Lords. 1786, Monday, January 9. At leisure hours this week I read the life of Sir William Penn, a wise and good man, but I was much surprised at what he relates